Great. Well, again, thank you, Greg, for your generous introduction, and I will touch on that in my remarks tonight. Well, Gerald Holton made major contributions to the birth of the AIP Center for History of Physics in 1962. He just barely scratched the surface in his remarks tonight, while my first association with it was in its infancy in 1966, when I was working on my PhD dissertation on the history of the Compton effect at the University of Wisconsin. I visited the center for about a week, studying the correspondence, lecture notes, and other documents relevant to my dissertation. Then, since Compton's research notebooks had just become available for study at Washington University in St. Louis, I went there in 1967 and prepared a comprehensive description and table of contents of his 32 research notebooks, which I deposited in the center's archives. My work was supported by an NSF grant administered by the center, so this was really an early example of the center's highly fruitful grants and aid of research program. Throughout this work, I enjoyed the gracious hospitality and assistance of the knowledgeable and exuberant Charlie Weiner, who succeeded James King as director of the center in 1965, and of the warm and generous Joan Warno, archivist extraordinaire of the Niels Bohr Library. Both became lifelong friends, Charlie until his death this past January at the age of 80, and Joan until her death in 2006 at the age of 74, less than a year after she had married Martin Klein, another lifelong friend who died in 2009 at the age of 84. My second association with the AIP Center for History of Physics also occurred in 1967, but it was only a virtual one. Those were halcyon days. When I went on the job market in the spring of 1967, 10 months before I actually received my PhD degree, I received an astonishing number of job offers, one of which was the associate directorship of the AIP Center, as it turned out. In any case, I had my heart set on teaching and research, so the offer I accepted was an assistant professorship at the University of Minnesota with a joint appointment in philosophy and physics. Erwin Hebert, my Dr. Vater in History of Science at Wisconsin, recommended me to Herbert Feigl, director of the Minnesota Center for Philosophy of Science, and he and Morton Hammermesh, head of the School of Physics and Astronomy, sealed the deal. I changed the direction of my research from the history of quantum physics to the history of nuclear physics after I organized a symposium on the history of nuclear physics in the 1930s at Minnesota in May 1977. Sad to say, but all of the speakers, Hans Bethe, Otto Robert Frisch, Maurice Goldhaber, Edwin McMillan, Bruno Pyrles, Amelia Segrais, John Wheeler, and Eugene Wigner, and all of the session chairs, Heinz Barschel, my Dr. Vater in physics at Wisconsin, Herman Feshbach, Willie Fowler, Alfred Neer, Bob Serger, and Bob Wilson, and all of the other non-local physicists present, Charles Critchfield, Eugene Feinberg, Gertrude Goldhaber, Stan Livingston, and Hans Seuss, as well as Laura Fermi, have died since then. Fortunately, their recollections have been preserved not only in the symposium proceedings, but for many of them also much more extensively through the enormously valuable oral history program that Charlie Weiner began in 1965, Spencer Ward expanded greatly beginning in 1971, and Greg Good has continued since 2009. These valuable and enlightening interviews and their transcripts were first under the highly professional care of Joan Warno, and since 1993 have been under that of Joe Anderson, now holding the endowed directorship of the Niels Bohr Library. My most sustained involvement with the AIP Center was from 1978 to 1993 as a member of the AIP Advisory Committee on the History of Physics, the last 13 of these 15 years as Martin Klein's successor as chair, who in turn had succeeded Gerald Holton, the first chair of the Advisory Committee. Most of the members of this committee consisted of some of the most prominent physicists in the country who were identified by the AIP nominating committee and then appointed by Bill Koch, AIP director from 1965 to 1987, and his successor, Ken Ford, from 1987 to 1993, who I've also drew on the expert advice of John Rigdon, director of physics programs since 1987. The members of the advisory committee met during 1978 to 1993 included such luminaries as Fred Seitz, Maurice Goldhaber, Monique Drori, Willie Fowler, Nicholas Bloombergen, Max Dresden, Bob Wilson, Emil Wolf, and Melba Phillips. It met annually in January at the AIP at 335 East 45th Street in New York, where its members were greeted by the huge black and white bulldogs that flanked its entrance. The committee discussed and provided advice on a broad range of topics of concern to the AIP Center, from budgetary to organizational, personnel, and programmatic matters. One significant question that the committee considered concerned the Sources for History of Quantum Physics project and the extensive correspondence, interviews, and other documents collected and preserved in the Archive for History of Quantum Physics. The SHQP project also owes a deep debt of gratitude to Gerald Holton, who served on the Joint Committee of the American Physical Society and American Philosophical Society on Theoretical Physics in the 20th Century, whose members also included John Van Vleck and John Wheeler. Their work began in 1960 and took concrete form in 1961 when Van Vleck, on behalf of the Joint Committee, offered the directorship of the SHQP project to his former student, Tom Kuhn, first in a telephone call and then on a visit to Berkeley. The Joint Committee and the AIP submitted an NSF proposal for financial support for the three-year period 1961 to 1964, and Kuhn accepted the directorship, appointed John Heilbrun as assistant director, Paul Foreman as senior editor, and Lenny Allen as administrator. They began interviewing quantum physicists in February 1962, the same year that the AIP Center was founded. Niels Bohr died during the course of his interview that November, and his son Ola then agreed to include his father's extensive scientific correspondence and other materials in the AHQP. Its three original repositories were the American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia, University of California at Berkeley, and the Niels Bohr Institute in Copenhagen. The AIP Niels Bohr Library soon joined as a fourth repository. Now, since the AHQP preamble explicitly authorized the creation of additional libraries of deposit, and since I was teaching and carrying out research on the history of quantum physics and had recently founded the program of the History of Science and Technology at Minnesota, I was eager to pursue the possibility of Minnesota becoming a library of deposit. To make a rather long story short, between November 1973 and February 1977, with the support of Martin Klein, chair of the AIP Advisory Committee, and Spencer Ware, director of the AIP Center, Ola Bohr, the Council of the American Physical Society, and the Library Committee of the American Philosophical Society approved Minnesota as a fifth deposit, the library deposit. Thus, after I became a member of the AIP Advisory Committee in 1978 and then its chair, I could draw on my experience, and in January 1991, I prepared a document that specified the procedures for authorizing new libraries of deposit of the AHQP. Its essential points were that the advisory committee would receive applications but would act only in a strictly advisory capacity to the Bohr family and the two APS societies in recommending whether or not an application should be approved. By the early 1990s, there were 17 libraries of deposit with more to follow. For entirely different reasons, an earlier meeting of the AIP Advisory Committee in January 1984 especially stands out in my memory because Willie Fowler was then one of its members, and he had just returned from Stockholm, where he and Chandrasekhar had received the Nobel Prize in Physics 1 month earlier, on December 10, 1983. I therefore deliberately concluded the advisory committee meeting about 20 minutes early and asked Willie to allow us to share vicariously in some of his experiences in Stockholm. He obliged enthusiastically by telling story after story, among them how very much he had enjoyed being awakened in the morning by beautiful Swedish damsels who then escorted him from place to place. But one story stands out. That year, Barbara McClintock also won the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. And when Willie said that when he first saw her in Stockholm, he rushed up to her, threw his arms around her, and said, "Barbara, Have you ever kissed a Nobel laureate? I haven't. Smack. I can still see the wicked smile on Willie's face and the twinkle in his eyes. Willie was also a train buff, and he took great delight in telling us that he was allowed to serve as engineer on a train from Stockholm to a nearby town and back. This story immediately brought to my mind that another Nobel laureate, John Van Vleck, known to all his friends and colleagues as Van, also was a train buff, to the extent that he knew the train schedules at all major American and European cities. Some years ago, Bernard Cohen told me the following story. Bernard was invited to give a colloquium in two Midwestern cities, A and B, so he asked Van what train he should take from A to B. Van said, well, take the 10 a.m. from A and you'll arrive at B at 2:30 p.m. So that's what Bernard did. But when he arrived at B, his host said, I don't understand. You could have taken the 10:30 at A and been here at 2 o'clock. So big a mystery. And when Bernard returned to Harvard, he asked Van, what about this? Van said, yes. But wasn't that the best beef lunch you've ever had? I can't resist telling you another story. Van had an enduring love of both Wisconsin, where as an undergraduate he played the flute in the Wisconsin Marching Band, and of Minnesota, where he was on the faculty from 1922 to 1928, and where he had married one of his students, Abigail Pearson. I and my wife Helga came to know Van and Abigail well in the mid-1970s, especially after he had written to me suggesting that I do some archival research at Minnesota, and also had written to one of his former students, Chung Lin, suggesting that he do some archival research at Wisconsin, our task being to dig up documentary evidence on the origins of the Minnesota and Wisconsin football songs, the Minnesota Rouser and On Wisconsin. I have a stack of letters about an inch and a half thick in my file of Van's distinctive handwriting on this and other subjects. In any case, Van then turned Chung's and my research results into an article on these famous songs, which Van always called our magnum opus, and which was published in the Minnesota Wisconsin alumni magazines in 1977 and 1980. Along the way, Van asked me what the Minnesota football cheer SKIUMA, SKI-U, -MAH meant. I eventually tracked down an alumnus who told me that it was an old Indian war cry meaning victory. So when Van won the Nobel Prize in 1977, I sent him a one-word telegram, SKIUMA. He replied that, I remember that this means victory. Yours was the briefest but most to the point congratulatory letter I received. Van was truly a wonderful and remarkable man. When I served on the AIP Advisory Committee, we had regular postprandial proceedings. After every meeting, Joan Warno, Martin Klein, and I, and various committee members like Melba Phillips and Willie Fowler, adjourned to Costello's Bar at 225 East 44th Street, a few blocks away from the AIP, where amidst the Thurber cartoons on the walls, Martin taught me the joys of Irish whiskey. I recently Googled Costello's Bar and discovered that it is now the Overlook Lounge, which is billed as a hot spot for young people. Another sign that the world is going to pot. One major exception is the AIP Center for History of Physics. Its successive directors, Charlie Weiner, Spencer Word, and Greg Good, and their colleagues, with the strong support of the successive AIP directors, Bill Koch, Ken Ford, Mark Brodsky, and Fred Dillon, as well as that of John Rigdon, director of physics program, and his successors, Jim Stith and Catherine O'Riordan, created the foremost disciplinary history center in the world. In addition to the highly influential programs I discussed earlier, the AIP Center has served as a way station for postdoctoral students who have gone on to outstanding careers elsewhere. I think, for example, of Finn Oserud, longtime director of the Niels Bohr Archive in Copenhagen, Alan Needell, now curator at the Smithsonian Institution, Ron Dole, now associate professor of the heavy history at Florida State University, and Babak Ashrabi, now executive director of the Philadelphia Area's Center for History of Science. The enormous success of the AIP Center has made it a model that has inspired others to emulate it, as for example, I myself did in 1979-80 when I led the effort that brought the Charles Babbage Institute for the History of Information Processing to the University of Minnesota. In closing, however, let me return to the early 1990s when Ken Ford more than once talked to the AIP Advisory Committee about the impending move of the AIP from New York to College Park. I recall in particular him saying that he had insisted that the Niels Bohr Library would occupy the most prominent location in the New American Center for Physics above its entrance on the second floor, thus symbolizing architecturally the high value he and the AIP placed on the history of physics. All of us at this 50th anniversary celebration owe our deep and heartfelt thanks to Ken for his inspiring and far-sighted vision. I do, however, miss the Bulldogs. Thank you very much.